boing, boom, chuck, boing, boom, chuck, boing, boom, chuck, boing, ping, boom, chuck.
This is my wife G's most hated band, or so she thinks. I'm sure I could get her to lunge for the stereo's power switch faster if I put on some Severed Heads or some Fetus, but it's this band that's always first off her tongue when the subject of bad music comes up. Not surprising, I suppose, as Kraftwerk does tend to evoke a lot of strong responses, for I feel as strongly towards the band as she does away from it. She once asked me why I thought Kraftwerk was so important, and I found I couldn't really answer. I mumbled something about the embrace of technology and the peculiar warmth of their glowing circuits, but she was unconvinced. Whether you love them or hate them, at this point in popular music history, you have to admit that they are one of the most influential bands of the last couple of decades. Formed in the early 1970s in Germany, Kraftwerk loosely translates to power station, Kraftwerk was the first band to really embrace machines for what they were, not for what they could be. Lots of groups use synthesizers, but they mostly use them to imitate existing instruments or for the pure novelty of their sounds. Kraftwerk was really the first band to embrace those hard electronic tones as beautiful in and of themselves. While others fretted about the place of machines in human society and celebrated that vague, indefinable human element that separates us from our creations, Kraftwerk exalted the machine as the ideal being and worked to strip all that pesky and unpredictable humanness from their sound. The result is a stunning body of work that was decades ahead of its time, ultimately influencing everything from disco to hip-hop to each and every artist that fits under the wide umbrella of electronica. Kraftwerk's first and most improbable hit was the 22-minute long Autobahn, an ode to that famous shrine of speed. When I was in high school and eating everything electronic I could get my hands on, I heard about this legendary track, but had never actually had the opportunity to listen to it. Being financially poor in a rural part of Michigan meant that my opportunities to hear the cutting edge of music were severely limited. I only had a certain amount of money to spend on records, $10 a month to be precise, and the range of available material was pretty narrow, so I had to choose my purchases wisely. Kraftwerk sounded interesting from what little I had read about them, but there were several albums available, and I didn't know which one to get, and it was just too much of a risk at that point. And then Jeff came to town. Jeff was a guest dance teacher from the Ozone Dance Theater, and one of the strangest guest dance teachers we ever had. And believe me, we had quite a parade of weirdos coming out to take up residence in our neck of the North Woods. His area of expertise fell under the general rubric of modern dance, but if you were to get more specific, you'd have to call his style sort of a post-hippie neo-stoner aesthetic. He wore army fatigues as dance clothes, choreographed pieces using the I Ching, and his favorite method of warming up the class was something he called warm space, in which you did whatever it was that you felt was the best thing to warm you up in the morning. Since I took a 3-hour class with him that started at 8:15 in the morning, warm space quickly devolved into sleep space, with dancers crashed out on the floor for a half an hour until he finally got us all up to do some exercises. And his exercises would often involve jumping up and down for half an hour or spinning in circles until you thought you were going to puke. A couple of weeks after he arrived, he held auditions for his piece for the spring dance concert, each teacher having to choreograph and stage at least one piece per trimester. In his typical style, he told the assembled dancers that there was no set format for the audition. Instead of showing us a series of combinations and then watching us perform them to decide who to use, which was how the typical dance audition was structured, he was just going to put on some music and we were supposed to dance to it in whatever way we liked. Let the fair terpsichore have her way with us while he watched. He wanted to get a sense of how we moved naturally, or so he said. But since he ended up picking everybody who showed up to be in his piece anyway, he may have just wanted to DJ for us for an hour. He went over to the stereo, turned it all the way up. He used to really cheese off my mom, who was the resident ballet teacher when he did this, much to my delight, and put on a record. There was the slam of a car door, and then a slow revving to life of an engine, which receded as the car pulled out of the driveway, honking. Then a moment of silence, and from the silence, a mechanized voice, intoning, reverently, this was it. I was finally going to hear Kraftwerk. I rolled my shoulders and shook out my legs, anticipating the dance. The slow pulse of synthesizers began. I let my body float as though I were in water, each movement slowed and exaggerated in the fluid. Even though the music was clearly and celebratorily electronic, there was still an undeniable warmth to it, a kind of innocence, a naive optimism. This was a brave new world, and yes, all was right. I did love Big Brother. It was Sonic Soma, and each time the chorus would wind up and the song sounded like it was ending, I mourned that it was over. But each time it rose again to fill the room with its automatic cheerfulness. I danced and swirled and reveled in the beautiful washes of color and non-deceptively simple melodies for 20 minutes, mesmerized and transported. Swirling and spinning and rolling across the floor with 30 other dancers in physical communion, a giant swirling organism in which each member, each ant, danced to his or her own different drummer, now twisting together with two or three others, now spiraling out on their own orbit, always contributing to the whole. It was physical jazz, and I didn't ever want it to stop. Eventually, and inevitably, the song did come to an end after filling an entire album side. Jeff filled up the rest of the hour with wonderful music, magical modern music I had only dreamed of. It was Jeff that first introduced me to what very well may be the greatest album ever recorded, Brian Eno and David Byrne's landmark collaboration, My Life in the Bush of Ghosts. Looking back, that afternoon audition was one of the highlights of my high school career, a moment in which I was young and strong and free and happy, a moment in which I knew I had found a kindred musical spirit, and in which I soared and skipped and danced to my long-sought music, music that spoke to me and for me, music that touched some inexplicable, deep, pre-verbal spot in my soul. Music I was meant to hear. As I spun around that room, I knew I was home. After this, I became a huge Kraftwerk fan. I turned Jeff on to what little cool stuff I had gathered on my own, and he turned me on to a number of bands that still rank among my favorites. and chief among these was Kraftwerk. I couldn't explain why the simplistic electronic automaton music made me so happy, but it did. It was the beginning of the fruitful marriage of my two favorite musical trends, the textures and tones of pure electronic music and the thrilling energy and driving beat of rock music. The 80s had officially begun. Jeff ended up choreographing a sprawling, random multimedia dance to the first two tracks from My Life in the Bush of Ghosts, one from Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, and the glorious title track from Kraftwerk's 1975 album, Radioactivity. Like much of Kraftwerk's material, there was a cozy, almost nostalgic warmth to the track. Amidst all the fiercely electronic, impossibly dry, soulless sounds, there was a warm, rich bed of vocals. Treated mechanical vocals, but vocals nonetheless. By being filtered and processed, the ghostly mechanized chorus sounds like it's coming out of some old radio in the 40s, glossing the whole track with a sheen of nostalgia for a future that's no longer possible. The Brazilians have a word for that. Saudade. The warm, glowing, clean, happy mechanized society of leisure that hung like a carrot in front of the post-war boom. There were some 30 dancers in his piece, all dressed in black with white tennis shoes, and each piece of music had a different feel and was choreographed using different random elements or patterns. The Kraftwerk movement of his dance cycle consisted of half the dancers jumping back and forth from foot to foot in unison, while the other half walked across the stage as slowly and smoothly as they possibly could. During the dance, there were slides projected around the stage, and friends who saw it described it as pleasantly nonsensical. But for me, it was a triumph just to hear this glorious music pumped out through the giant amplification system of Corson Auditorium. We'll be right back. After that semester ended, I went back home, across the street, for summer vacation. My new academy friends gone for the summer, I tried to reacquaint myself with my old friends who lived in the area and with whom I had lost touch with while sequestered in the dorm. Lenore and Mel and I went out to spend the day at a favorite beach on Lake Michigan. We lived within easy walking distance of two lakes, Duck and Green, or Wabakoness and Wabakoneta in the native tongue, but drove the hour or so to Lake Michigan for special occasions. The day was hot and the water was cold and the company was good. We soon fell back into our easy comfort around each other, but there was an edge that hadn't been there before. I had been away and had had experiences that they didn't have. I no longer saw them on a day-to-day basis, so we weren't connected like we used to be. We were still friends, and good ones at that, but something had shifted. Also, we had all recently gone through puberty, and so our awareness of each other had changed drastically. Mel and Lenore were still good friends, but now they had breasts.
I don't want to be your sex object. That's a fact.
After swimming, we were lying on a low dune, sunning ourselves, and listening to the only passably interesting radio station around. They were playing the standard pop poop of the day, Let's Get Physical and Endless Love, for example, when my ear was caught by a different sound. A cheerful tune full of bubbling synthesizers and gently rigid electronic beats started. The keyboards whistled and chirped agreeably, and then the vocals started.
I'm the operator with my pocket calculator. I'm the operator with my pocket calculator.
I knew right away it must be Kraftwerk. Amazed that such an agreeable sound had cracked the radio, and the radio in Traverse City at that, I listened happily as the song unfolded.
I am adding and subtracting. I'm controlling and composing. I'm the operator with my pocket calculator. I'm the operator with my pocket calculator.
Pocket Calculator was the first and, as it turned out, only single from the recently released Computer World album, one that I hadn't had the chance to hear yet, but which fit the Kraftwerk mold perfectly, and I smiled in recognition.
I am adding and subtracting.
There was no pretense to being anything but purely synthetic, and the lyrics sounded like they were written by an early artificial intelligence program, but there was a great warmth to it.
By pressing down a special key, it plays a little melody. By pressing down a special key, it plays a little melody.
After it was over, Mel and Lenore burst into laughter and quickly tried to outdo each other in insulting the song. I grinned and kept quiet. Things were different. The times, they were a-changin', and the future was mine. It's perhaps not surprising that Kraftwerk came out of Germany. Their cool embrace of mechanization sits well with the Teutonic stereotype. Their love of technology was so complete that they built their own studio with equipment they designed, and they even had life-size mannequins of themselves made to send to photo shoots and interviews. They are notoriously private and don't work with anybody else. Even Michael Jackson's request to work with them was met with a curt and firm nein. They shun almost all interviews, but I do remember reading one with Ralph Hutter, one of the group's founders. The interview followed him around for a few hours and noticed that Ralph liked to carry a small pair of scissors with him wherever he went. Then, if he found himself in some public space where Muzak was being piped in, a hotel or shopping mall or something, he would find the speakers and cut their wires. His contention was that music was so prevalent that it was quickly becoming meaningless. Music should be savored and enjoyed, not washed over you indiscriminately, he explained, as he tucked his scissors back into his pocket, a sonnet wire dangling from the elevator wall.
I programmed my own computer, beam myself into the future.
I wasn't the only one who responded to Kraftwerk's clean, utopian mechanization. Inner-city black DJs in New York City started playing their records at dances. One group, Soulsonic Force, had an early rap hit with a track they called Planet Rock, which was nothing but a slightly reordered combination of a track from Kraftwerk's 1977 benchmark album Trans Europe Express and the rhythm track from the song Numbers, found on Computer World. At the same time, DJs in Detroit started playing Kraftwerk at dances and modeling their own dance music after the German pioneers. The combination of cheap electronics and a fondness for the mechanization and celebrated artifice of Kraftwerk led to the birth of techno, which started the whole rave culture and set the groundwork for today's burgeoning electronica scene. It's curious that Kraftwerk, a group accused, not unfairly, of being soulless, should be so embraced by those groups most frequently associated with soul, growing up in the bloated, empty shadow of Motown. Kraftwerk went into hiding after their next album, Electric Cafe, hit the stores in 1986, and except for one single, Expo 2000, produced for the turn of the millennium, they remained silent for almost 18 years, beating out Peter Gabriel and Ecstasy for the longest dormant without being dead record. Although the word is that the two founders, Ralph Hutter and Florian Schneider, still get together to play music with each other and their beloved machines every day. Finally, they broke their silence with 2003's Tour de France soundtracks, an expansion of a single released 20 years earlier. The track sounds great and entirely up-to-date, without significantly updating their sound, and the famous bike race is a fitting subject for their interest and enthusiasm for the man-machine interface. They have even started touring again, showing up at festivals and raves and getting ecstatic receptions from legions of fans who weren't born when Kraftwerk first laid out the plans for the future of music, a future that has come to full fruition under their watchful, mechanical eyes. Because of their vision and appeal and their steadfast integrity, Kraftwerk became one of the most significant cornerstones in contemporary music. Their embrace of technology and computers anticipated the wired Y2K world by 30 years. Today, anybody who uses a synthesizer or enjoys dance music owes a huge debt, whether acknowledged or not, to the soulless Power Station from Germany. And that, G, is why Kraftwerk is so important. Thank you.